Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box. Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's MarketHouse.com. And use the code COUNTRY.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. All right. Welcome to the Bear Grease Render. Before I get into introductions, which I am going to do, I've got to admit we've got some major problems. Major problems. I still have grown men almost every day sending me pictures of panthers, of large black cats.
I don't see what the problem is.
When are you gonna stop ignoring the evidence?
Listen.
Look at Gary.
He's pulling out his phone.
They're all coming too. From Gary.
No, no. Listen. They send me pictures and like don't say anything. Just like a picture. And it's like clearly a real black large cat. And it's as if they're saying, Clay, do you not get it that there are such thing as black panthers? Okay. What my point is, I am highly aware that there are large black cats in the world, okay? And if what I am saying is that there is no such
please
thing
stop.
As a black mountain lion.
You're saying please stop. That's what he's saying. For the love of humanity, please stop.
Please stop. No, I actually did get a really good a guy. Now this I appreciate. A guy sent me a video yesterday. And he gave no explanation. It was just a video on Instagram. It was his grandmother. And it was someone I didn't know. It was this picture. It was this video of this like perfect Southern grandmother. And she's sweeping in her little kitchen. And you know, the decor in the house, you could have just walked in there, any one of us, and would just been like, this is my grandmother's house.
Right. I can't figure out if this is got a happy ending. Yeah.
I'm like, where's this going? Yeah. And she is telling a story and clearly doesn't know she's being videoed. And she's telling a story about a black panther. I mean, just giving this guy like what for? Just like, your grandfather was hunting over here and she's sweeping. She's got her back to the camera. She's sweeping. And a black panther walked out and she saw it. And I saw the tail of a black panther one time. And I mean, she's just like, I mean, there's no room for like, was it true? Was it not? It was just like, This is the truth. No explanation from the guy. He just sent me this video of his grandmother as if to say, you wrong, Clay Newcomb.
what else do you need?
You calling my grandmother a liar?
And then I went to the guy's profile and shout out to him. He was from East Tennessee.
Okay. Well, there's tons of black
I appreciated there. That a lot. No, welcome to the Bear Grease Render. I've got to my left Brent Reeves, who is going to give I'm going to ask him to do something here in a minute. To his directly to his left,
well, that's quite an
is
introduction.
Joshua Spillmaker.
That's me,
Josh. There was the land bridge is catching on.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I need my own T-shirt. I need my own hat,
man. Hey, people start hashtagging land bridge.
You think that would happen a while ago?
You should use your power.
I'm going to put a picture of Josh Spillmaker on my Instagram, just to show you guys what I'm talking about.
I'm getting a tattoo.
Land bridge. Yeah. Okay.
Your face,
to Josh's
right
left
here.
Is Dr. Daniel Roop.
Hey.
Welcome, Dr. Roop.
Good to be here.
Good to see you. And hey, back from where he was, my dad, Gary Newcomb. Good to see you, Dad.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Yep. Dad has been known to almost daily send me videos of black felines. I think he understands what I'm talking about.
Oh,
though.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a new guest on the render. This is exciting. This is exciting news.
Especially exciting for me.
We have a new guest. And I want all of you to feel the pressure of this, okay?
Oh, man.
This is becoming like Chopped.
Okay. Yeah. There are some faces here that I don't see. Yeah.
You know, the where they line up the chefs.
Yeah.
And like they critique them and it's like Chopped, okay? And we're not going to say, you know, who's not here today. But no pressure whatsoever. You know what? This is really sad. The reason we have to limit the number of people in this room is because of technical issues. I've got 6 headsets. No, I here's what exactly what I did. Because Josh and Malachi are like such good friends of mine, I messaged them both, Daniel. I messaged them both on a message and said, "Hey boys, I really want my friend, I'm not going to say his name yet, to come to the render. Would one of you guys be willing to not come?"
To graciously bow out.
Do you know the first text message I got was Josh Spillmaker saying, "It ain't going to be me." I'm dead serious. He was like, "Nope." And so
I actually sent him a meme of Dana Carvey doing the George Bush
not
senior
gonna do it.
Not gonna do it.
Not gonna do it.
And so Malachi picked up his phone like an hour later and was like, "Well,
thank goodness.
Okay, I guess I won't come."
Yeah, he was relieved.
Oh no! So our new guest is Forrest Teeter.
Woo! Howdy,
Forrest
everybody.
Teeter. Welcome,
what a
man.
Name! Thanks. What
I
a
know.
Name! I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. No
I
doubt.
Feel like Josh you should Spillmaker be a country singer.
Country singer. I'm glad you don't have a mustache for us because
well,
I would have some serious competition.
Believe me, I would if I could grow one. This is like, I feel kind of oppressed by this room right now. He and I got something in common here. But yeah, Gary, this is, you and Gary are the only clean-shaven ones.
I ain't got much to show here, really.
You're the only two that actually held real jobs in your life, too.
I was forced into it.
No, hey, okay. Me and Forrest have a very complicated web of relationship, okay?
Because we're in prison together.
No. How old are you, Forrest?
I'm 25.
25? I told him you were 30.
Really?
Yeah.
So we met after I killed my first black bear, nice cinnamon bear from up
so
in the Ozarks.
It was during a time when I was recruiting stories for Arkansas Black Bear Association.
Oh, yeah.
And this kid killed this bear. And so I was like, "Hey, dude, would you like to write a story for
us?" He did. I was in 11th grade, and that was like, I was like, "Man, I'm going to be famous."
Yeah, man. How many
in the
years
Arkansas
ago was
Baron
that?
Buck trial. That's almost 10 years ago, probably 9 years
10
ago.
Okay. The story continues. So we become buddies because he writes this story, you know, just like kind of like social media buddies. And then you killed a big deer.
I did.
He killed a 160-inch deer.
Cool. Could you send me a pen of where that was?
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I'll share it. He killed a 160-inch deer. I said, "Hey, how about we do a story on this deer?" Now, did you write this story?
I did, yep. I wrote this story.
Okay, so he comes up here and he brings his dad. And we have a great time and hit it off. About that time, I needed somebody to go with me to Idaho to film a mountain lion hunt. And so
I didn't know you went on that trip.
I did.
It was just like the right moment. It was like, man, I bet Forrest would like to go with me to film that mountain lion hunt.
I think
how old were you?
I think a sophomore in college, so it had been a while. So probably 20 years old, something like that. I think I was more excited than you were. I remember I was like texting you, I was like, You ready for this, man? You ready for this? Like I'm so excited. He's like, and I remember he told me at one point, he was like, man, I need you to weigh your expectations. Just a very, you know, level headed thing to say. But I need you to weigh your expectations, a lot of factors, the snow and everything. I was like, all right, reel it in, you know.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It was so cool.
Okay. We're moving forward now. So we go to Idaho and have a great time. And I killed a mountain lion with a traditional bow.
Yep.
We made a film that's got like 600,000 views on Bear Hunting Magazine YouTube channel. You can check it out. So Forrest filmed all that. And it was a tough hunt. It was cold and it was really neat. Okay. The story continues. I'll come back to the tripod. Did you know? I bet you don't even remember this. Or maybe you probably remember it. When I first had the idea of starting a podcast, I talked to you about being on the podcast with me. He is the only person that's ever straight up stiff-armed me on wanting to be a podcast partner.
He didn't ask you to read a book, did he?
I wanted to. I had other obligations I was working on. We'll get into
this back before I knew what podcasts were.
So last Tuesday.
Yeah. This would have been like 2015 or something.
Right.
It was years before. I was just like brainstorming.
And we talked about it on the way to Idaho, too.
Yes. And so I was like, hey, we got to start a podcast. Forrest is like, nope.
Is that what I said?
It was just like Malachi Nichols when I asked him if he wanted to be a partner in a boat. And he was like, nope.
You know what else,
Forrest Teeter? I remember when I actually started the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast, I was randomly talking to you about it on the phone, and you asked me what I was going to call it, and I said I wanted to call it the Bear Grease Podcast.
Okay, this was years ago.
Forrest goes, nah, you don't want to do that.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
You did.
No.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Did I really?
Okay. You either just like totally agreed with me. I vividly remember you going, you don't want to have to remarket yourself. I may have presented to you Bear Hunting Magazine or Bear Grease.
Okay.
And I vividly remember you going, nah, you don't want to do that. But perhaps you were agreeing with something I had said. And I went with Bear Hunting Magazine podcast.
Right.
Hold on. This is going somewhere, okay? Because Bear Hunting Magazine podcast was such direct branding. I remember you saying, nah, you don't want to have to like convince people or tell them what Bear Grease is if you're trying to promote a magazine.
Right.
So it was like, let's just go straightforward marketing. This is the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. We produce Bear Hunting Magazine, okay? Because of that, from this guy right here, the Bear Grease name was preserved for such a time as this.
And see, that's what I was thinking when I said it.
Let me tell you something else. One time, the best dog name my family ever had. Okay, you know, I've got kids, family, wife, and like we talk about dogs. The best dog name that we ever had.
I bet I know it.
Was we had the idea to name a dog Scout. Okay, we almost named our kids Scout, but we didn't. So I go drive 15 hours to go get a plot hound, and my family is like, we're naming this dog Scout. And I'm like, whoa, we don't want to use the best name on a dog we know nothing about. Like, you can't name the dog until you see it, you understand it. And I was like, I don't want to use that name on a dog that is going to be of ill repute. Okay, we get the dog and the dog doesn't work out. The dog is no longer on Newcomb Farm, and he got the name Scout. Ruined it.
Mm.
Are you with me?
Should have named him.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
The dog name is ruined. We can never go back and get that.
Yeah.
That would have happened if Forrest Teeter hadn't told me to not name my podcast Bear Grease.
Thank you. You see what I'm saying? Thank you, Forrest.
You're welcome for that. You know,
man.
Yeah.
This would be the Scout podcast.
There we go.
Okay, you're tracking with me.
Or you should have just named the dog Forrest.
Your best dog name is Cheater. What happened to Cheater?
Well, I mean, Cheater got stolen by some construction workers down there.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, you're welcome to that.
So you helped preserve the name Bear Grease for such a time as this.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Forrest is in the Navy. So Forrest has now made something of himself. He doesn't just, like, follow around, like, people filming him. Forrest, dude, you just went to – tell us about being in the Navy.
Okay, so I've – relatively new to the Navy. I've been in 2.5 years, I guess. I went to officer candidate school in September of 2018, and native Arkansan, as most of y'all probably suspected, but went to Arkansas Tech, and just kind of decided about halfway through college. Had a good job, honestly, but it was kind of a, you remember I was catching birds and just kind of all over the place. Yeah. I'm like, where does this trajectory go? There definitely was a future there, but it's like I needed to look at something else and, you know, explore my options, and always been interested in aviation, but decided I was just going to send it on trying to be a pilot in the military. The Navy kind of had the lowest standards at the time, which is what I needed for myself. So I explored my options there, got picked up. Now,
for you three over here, I'm pointing at Dan, Josh, and Brent. He's in the Navy, and that's boats and stuff.
Okay.
But he flies an airplane.
Wow.
Confused.
Clay still.
It took me. Appreciate it. It's taken me a while to figure that out.
Yeah, and Clay still hasn't seen Top Gun, by the way. I just want to throw that out there. So,
oh,
true story.
Man, wow. Come on.
So, anyway,
thanks to Gary Newcomb,
he protected you. From,
he protected did. You from Scientology.
High standards.
He put y'all to bed in the bank vault at night, didn't he?
No. But, so you fly like a incredible plane for the Navy,
right?
Which is
right.
not a small thing. They don't just let anybody fly that thing, Dan.
So.
Tell us what you fly.
So I fly the E6 Mercury. It's a big 707, big white plane. And basically, it's just...
Do most pilots, when they're describing their plane, tell the color?
It's unique in that most military aircraft are gray.
Yeah.
I'll say that. So it's basically a relay aircraft to talk to the nuclear submarines that are under the water in case we have missiles inbound. We can kind of provide that last line of defense for the United States. So we're not operating over... anywhere outside of the United States, really. We kind
of. How many pilots fly that one plane?
I think we have.
Well, no, like in a plane. Like, oh, if you were to walk out on the airstrip and take it up in the air, would you have to have another pilot with you?
Yeah, so yeah, it's a multi-pilot aircraft. So generally have three on board, and that's going to be pilot, co-pilot, and then one who can kind of change out.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Hey, and the other thing, this guy's a heck of a hunter. Like, no doubt. Good hunter.
Thank you.
We're going to have Forrest play some music later.
Oh,
okay?
Nice.
Hey, we got a lot of very generous comments about the rendition of Old Slewfoot last time. Dad, you weren't here. What'd you think?
Oh, man, I tell you, it was impressive.
Yeah?
Yeah, especially the guy on the cowbell.
That cowbell.
I actually had one, the only like musical correction that I had was on the cowbell. Somebody was like, the dude on the cowbell needs to get on time. And then I started listening to it and I was like, yeah, he's right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hey, Judy and I noticed that.
At one point in the song, I realized I was daydreaming. And I had to bring it back.
He was hypnotized.
Oh, wow. Okay, so what we're going to do on this podcast is we're going to talk about moonshine, NASCAR, and bear hunting, the Bear Grease podcast that just came out. But before we do that, I totally skipped over. Every time I introduce all you guys, I want to like give just like a little nugget of information. And so, Brent, I got there's a couple of stories that I had to order, okay? Just like special order stories. Okay, so Brent Reeves.
Yep.
Tell me about your dad and the coon dog they used to borrow.
Borrow in air quotes. When my dad and my uncle, my dad passed away now, my uncle's still here, so I have to reassure him when I tell this story that the statute of limitations is out on dog napping. But this would have been in the mid-50s. Mm. My dad was probably 12, 13 years old, and my uncle, Jimmy Ray, would have been, he's a few years younger, and they loved to coon hunt. And there was a man lived down the road who had a good coon dog. He also had a good job. And so instead of coon hunting all night, he would work. You know, he'd go to bed early. He'd work all day, go to bed early, and he'd hunt some on the weekends. But he had a real good dog, and apparently my dad and my uncle thought that dog was going to waste, just laying out there in the yard. Coon hides were pretty valuable during that time, too. And they would go hunting with this man. But they tree a coon, they kill a coon. That man gets it. It's his dog. You know, he's shooting it. They're just little old boys going with him. So, I mean, you couldn't expect him to give him the coon hides. And you probably wouldn't have expected him to steal the dog during the week, but that's what they started doing. They would slip up there after he went to bed, and old dog was tied up on a chain in the backyard. And you could say there was a nightlight. You could see him. Said the old dog had to set up. He'd look at them. They'd slip up there, and they'd hide the edge of the woods, and they'd take turns. One of them would go up there and take the collar off the dog, put the collar back just the way it was, like the dog had slipped the collar. The dog would follow them. They'd go out in the woods. They'd tree. They go coon hunting. They got tired. They go back home. They just let the dog go, and he would go back and get in that doghouse. The next morning, man would wake up, go out there and feed his dog. He's laying in the house, and there's the collar is hooked back just like it was.
How in the world did he get out of that?
He's slipping that collar, you know. This dadgum dog. He said they did that for a week, about every other night they did that. The last night they went up there to do it, probably the third or fourth time. He said, I send my little brother up there, my uncle. This is Dad telling the story. He said, little brother goes up there, and he crawls up there to cut the dog loose, and he comes crawling back real fast. And Dad said, I thought maybe the man had woke up and was coming outside. And he said, what's wrong? He said, we done hunted this dog to death. And he said, what do you mean? He can't. We done made him sick. He can't breathe. He said, he's got pneumonia. He's coughing. And Dad said, I'll go up there and fix it, you know. So he crawls up there and said, the closer he got, the more he could hear that dog was. He was struggling to breathe. And he's like, what in the world? We have tore this dog up. We have broke this dog. But so he crawled up there to get a better look, and that collar was so tight on that dog's neck that he said if they would have took him that night, he don't think he would have been able to swallow or get a drink of water the next night. So the man was tightening that collar up every night. That dog was slipping it
off. Just cinching it down one after the other.
Cinching it down. So they quit stealing.
If I recall, it was a blue tick.
It was a blue tick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shocker.
It was a blue tick.
Man, that's great. Perfect. Hey, now for the... Y'all like these introductory stories?
Yes.
This is great. And I didn't even tell the real story about Forrest losing my tripod on the side of the mountain in Idaho. That's the main thing that I've ribbed Forrest about since 2017.
27. It's been a decade.
So, okay, listen. Here's a treasure hunt for you. If somebody can go bring me back my tripod.
They get a spot on the Bear Grease render.
No doubt.
It's like the golden ticket right there.
If you can find, and I would identify it, and I would just be honest about it. If you can tell me on a map where that was, and this excludes everybody who was involved in the hunt, because there was a houndsman involved, I will fly you to Arkansas to be on the Bear Grease podcast if you can return that tripod to me. We treed this lion, and we come off the mountain. It was a terrible hike up. Took 2 hours to hike up.
Oh, yeah.
And we come out well after dark. We're like walking in the dark. We didn't have flashlights. Mm-hmm. And we get back down to the truck. And the next day, I'm like, Forrest is my cameraman. I'm like, where's the tripod? And he's like, you had it. And I'm like, no, I didn't have it, Forrest. This is your job. So the tripod is still probably standing up on three legs.
So, yeah.
At the base of a big old fir tree.
Yep.
That at one time had a lion in it.
I guarantee it.
Forrest got fired and he never amounted to anything.
Get this, he still paid me. Clay took a net loss on that one.
I took a net loss.
He wrote me a check for like $150. I'm like, all right.
Yep. I do have to, Meat Eater just came out with a Campfire Stories audio book. If you like stories like you just heard, man, they went all out. It's a 6-hour audiobook called Campfire Stories from Meat Eater. You can buy it anywhere you buy audiobooks. Random House is the one that officially published it. But basically, in all the travels of Meat Eater, they gathered up lots of stories. I mean, I don't know if it's like 10 or 15 or 20 stories, they have the person that the story happened to tell the story. People are like super excited about it. So as of July 20th, you can buy that book anywhere you buy audiobooks. You know, it's an audiobook. So check that out. Meat Eater Campfire Stories. And you can also find that on themeateater.com where they have their books.
Sweet.
It's pretty cool. There's one sounds story. I'll give you a teaser for one story. And I heard this story directly from, it's from Steve Rinella. He's the one that recruited the story. But this is the way that it went. Is somewhere out west in one of the southwestern states, there was a poaching deal where a bunch of elk were getting killed and they were being shot with small caliber rifles and not recovered. Just like shooting an elk and just leaving it. This happened a lot. And so they called in the New Mexico Game and Fish to come in, and they did all this investigation. And finally, they felt like they had a pin on the guy who was doing it. They didn't know who he was. They just knew like what kind of truck he drove and stuff. This game warden is out one night, and he encounters the poacher, and they get in a road race, just an absolute road race. Wherever they're at, it's New Mexico, Arizona. The poacher gets out ahead of him and just disappears, just outruns the game warden. The game warden comes to a Y in the road, and he has to make a decision on which way the poacher went. The game warden pulls into this Y, and there's a big mud hole. And from his truck, he decides that a car has not been through that mud hole. So he pulled up to the mud hole. And then he decides that a car hadn't been there, so he backs out and he takes the left fork. End of story. They never catch the guy, ever. 15 years later, some extended period of time later, a guy gets arrested for like a streak of murders. Perhaps it was just one or two murders, but a guy gets arrested for murder. And they've got him in the interrogation room, and he just starts spilling his guts about all the stuff he's ever done bad. And he tells the investigator that he killed a bunch of elk, and he used to just shoot them and leave them lay, like a bunch of elk. So this is recorded that this man said this. Well, they go ahead and contact the Game and Fish and say, hey, we got a guy here that's about to go to prison for murder that says he killed a bunch of elk. The game warden, who's still a game warden, goes and says, well, I'd like to interview the guy.
I need to talk to this guy.
Goes, and this is, again, this is years later, maybe decades later. The guy, the game warden, is sitting across from this murderer and says, tell me about your elk. And the guy just starts laying out all the places he killed elk, and this game warden knows that this is the guy he was after for all those years. He doesn't tell him. The guy then says, one of your boys almost got killed. I mean, I don't know how he said it. He said, basically, I spared one of your boys' lives one night back, and he told where it was. And the guy goes, tell me more. And he says, I've gotten a game warden started chasing me down the road, came to a Y. I went through the mud hole because I knew that the guy would be able to tell that I went through the mud hole. He went through the mud hole, turned his truck into the woods, got out and had an Uzi, and he was shooting those elk with an Uzi.
Wow.
And he said, I got behind a bush about 5 feet after that mud hole, and I was sitting there, and when that officer came to the mud hole, I was going to just mow him down.
Wow.
And the game warden is the one who was in the truck.
Wow.
Is sitting there interviewing the guy. And he never told him.
Oh, really?
Really?
He never said that was me. But it's just a hair raising.
Yeah, for real.
Why didn't he shoot him?
Well, he didn't. The game warden pulled up to the mud hole, and this trained game warden who clearly perceived that no car had driven through the mud, so he turned around and went the other way.
But if it was anyway, it appeared to me he was close enough to shoot him.
Well, just the way it worked out, like the guy was going to just wait until he came right past him and just shoot him.
I got you.
I thought you were going to say it turned out it was that same grandma that was sweeping the floor real hard.
It was the guy from East Tennessee.
Grandma, I'm killing
him out. What a story. What a story.
So that's the kind of stories that are on. Wow. That's just one of them. And there's like firefighters almost getting killed with fires coming in on them, people getting saved from drowning, lots of hypothermia stories, wild hypothermia is like...
You ain't going to get one of them stories from in here today.
It's a little warm, isn't
no
it?
No hypothermia in here.
You might get dehydration.
The hypothermia stories are like really wild. People do start doing crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Like terminal... I've heard Steve talk about terminal burrowing. When people get hypothermia, they feel like they can dig into the ground and just ball up, and they end up basically digging their own grave.
Wow. Mm.
And there's a story about a man who did that but survived. But so, campfire stories, meeting, check it out.
Clay, I always remember the only thing that you get anxious about is drowning.
Yeah, it's true.
You had a close call once.
Yeah, yeah, I did.
It's the only thing I ever hear you talk about with like fear and reverence. Like, I don't want to get in that because it, I think it's
fast moving water, man.
Yep.
I'll tell that story another day. Yeah.
Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at WhitetailInstitute.com. That's WhitetailInstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location. allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
Hey, what'd y'all think of episode 2?
I think it stepped up. You know, the previous ones were probably a 5.5. We're probably might even be hitting 6 territory now.
Yeah,
it was pretty racy. It was pretty racy, I have to say.
Yeah.
I'd label that one as PG.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know if anybody caught it, and I don't necessarily want to bring attention to it. Did any of you guys hear a word that typically wouldn't be said in my podcast? Did you catch it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
If Gary didn't catch it, then
that's all I care about. To this day, I'm a grown man. All I care about is my dad not hearing somebody cuss.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, really?
I didn't hear it.
Did you not?
I thought it was you.
Man, my squirrel dog's got a squirrel treat out here. Can y'all hear him barking?
I thought it was.
Nobody heard Mr. Roy Clark call his dog a.
Oh, I did hear that.
Classic
I did hear
name.
That. I did
oh,
hear that.
Yeah, but that. I mean,
yeah. In that context,
he
I
used it in the
out.
Correct vernacular.
Yeah, I thought that was a technical term.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Okay, so y'all didn't even think about
that.
Do you use that term? I say jip.
Oh, okay.
Jip?
Jip.
But where does that come from?
In the term that he used, I mean, that word has been prostituted from that to be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
A bad word.
No, it's I didn't have any problems, but when I let Misty listen to it, she was like, oh, you going to leave that in there? Because I really do. I have boys, we have gained the trust of people that let their kids listen to our podcast. And that's something I take very serious.
That's great. Yeah, absolutely.
At the same time, like, the podcast is not necessarily like for kids. I mean, I got to get this dog to be quiet.
That could be some of the best discussion we have right there.
What's that?
This dog barking.
Oh, yeah. We got to get that dog shut up. No, I take it very serious that people can. I mean, I hear it all the time, and that's what I wanted. That's been my issue with some other things I listen to is like I got to be careful with the kids in the car because I just don't want them to hear foul language or anything. Yeah. And so, but it makes my day. It makes, like, if I go to Roy Clark's house, I want to hear him say that when he's talking about his dogs. Makes my day.
Why?
I just like it. Just he doesn't think a thing about it.
He just said it without skipping a beat that I was like, oh, yeah, that's normal.
Yeah, absolutely normal. I just wondered if anybody caught that. No, what highlight, Josh?
Of the podcast?
Yeah. So the second part, moonshine, NASCAR, bear hunting. It was kind of racy.
It was racy, and I actually didn't know all that about NASCAR. I thought that was terribly interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Them trying to outrun the fuzz.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and then the part at the end, I don't know if you know the whole snake handling thing.
That was pretty wild.
Yeah. That, you know, you hear a lot about that. And just to have that around people's culture, like there were certain groups of people that was completely normal.
Yeah.
You know?
To this day.
Yeah.
Now, he said that started in the 20th century, early 20th? Is that what he said, early 19th?
I want to say that the most of it started in the early 1900s.
No, that's a purely American thing. Does that happen elsewhere?
Nope. That's what he said. He said snake handling and churches for, you know, ceremony is like new. Dan, how did I handle that? Because, listen, I did not want to... Like I said it on the podcast, like I strongly believe in religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't like trying to say these people are crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, man. Yeah. So, but at the same time, I've been highly aware of not stereotyping people or painting a picture that is untrue because that's really easy to do. So on both podcasts, if you recall, I said, hey, I want you to know that Appalachia is a very... diverse. Number one, it's not all white people. Number two, it's a very modern part of the country. It's not like everybody lives in like a log cabin. I mean, you know, on the first one I said there's swanky coffee shops and Target Supercenter. I was trying to think of the most like urban things I could think of. But so I didn't want to stereotype. The snake handling churches definitely is a stereotype, but I was very interested in it, so I talked to him. How did I do?
I thought you handled it great. I mean, I think there's a place to say this is happening and kind of why it's happening without necessarily making a judgment call on it.
Yeah.
But as you're exploring their culture and talking about different things, that's a, especially people closely tied to the land. So much of what they do is physical, tangible activities. They don't just sit around at coffee shops and talk about their feelings. Yeah. They're harvesting tobacco or they're bear hunting or they're doing whatever. And this is another material manifestation of their culture in church.
Yeah.
Well, and if it's a part of it, I mean, why skip over something that's there?
And the other thing, I do think that it's been, I do think there were times when that was probably more authentically done.
Hmm.
And then some of this new stuff, and I've seen small documentaries on it. And it's just, to me, it's just clear that this is sensation, like they're trying to look sensational. And I think we have the right to at least say what we think.
Yeah.
And so that I didn't want to foster that, like, but at the same time there was some parts of it that were pretty interesting.
At some point that probably started with some form of, it's hard to imagine, but like kind of good or even neutral intentions.
Yeah.
And then it became, you know, a lot of people are going to.
Dad, did you ever hear about snake handling churches anywhere?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever know that to be done in Arkansas?
No. Only on documentaries that you see on TV.
Yeah.
And very intriguing. And the thing that intrigued me, if I understood it right, was people that would go document this stuff sometime would get caught up in that movement. And I'm like going, you got to be kidding me. So there is tremendous power in this activity, be whatever power it comes from. I mean, it captivated educated people.
Yeah.
Kind of like Stockholm syndrome, you know, where you identify with your, when you identify with your kidnappers, if you were there for such a long period of time, like Patty Hearst is a famous example of that. She was kidnapped by some faction. Was a granddaughter to the Hearst fortune, I think. And she was with them so long that she started helping them rob banks. You know what I mean? She was like, deal me in, boys. I'm in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see it everywhere. Also that, you know, people are, it's almost like a high they get from doing things that are life-threatening.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, skydivers and all that kind of stuff. I think that people experience that sensation of encountering a life-threatening situation and walking away unscathed.
The old saying is you never live until you almost die.
I think Tim McGraw said that, wasn't he?
He did. Oh, live like, But I mean, I have found that to be, you know.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
It does make sense because you got a group of people, they're meeting, I'm assuming weekly, they're doing it in person. It's a big group. They're engaged in a tangible physical activity. There's risk involved, but it happens in a socially sanctioned and kind of approved way, at least in their community. Just those factors right there, a lot of people in an urban setting are not going to have that.
Yeah.
You know, they're going, what they're, that for them is they're going to work. And they're just doing it to get paid, you know, maybe they enjoy their job, but you can see the draw, even though, you know, I'm never going to do that, nor would I feel the need to or condone it, but kind of socially the mechanics make sense of it.
Yeah. Forrest, what stood out to you about it?
I guess part of what you said about
not necessarily snake handling, we can move on, just the podcast in general.
Probably the thing that I really took note of the most, or I guess what kind of made me question myself and my own beliefs, was the part, number one, about the metaphor that your family made about, hey, if your kids were dealing meth, would you, you know, be beholden to these people? Is that honorable to protect those people and to not dole them out? And that kind of thing really stood out to me because it puts an interesting question. Number one, if obviously legal doesn't necessarily equal moral or ethical for that matter. So people that don't really have good opportunities to make money for their family, I mean, who's to say that any of us in that situation, hey, we got to put food on the table. Are we going to run moonshine? Are we going to do things that we normally wouldn't? Because when it comes down to it, you have responsibilities to your family. And, you know, it's hard to say without being in that situation what you do, but it definitely kind of can pull you two different directions.
Yeah.
So
What'd y'all think about my grandpa story?
Very
Houston
good.
Millsap.
You know, and you
I want to ask Dad about Houston.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, what were you going to say, Brent?
Well, you mentioned that, you know, that it wasn't uncommon. You know,
yeah.
I have a extended family member who would have, in the 30s, when he got caught, he went to the federal penitentiary in New Jersey. Hmm. And it's kind of a funny story how he got caught. He went to prison for making moonshine. The reason he got caught was a pair of overalls. And this guy was like lightning.
Tell me more.
This guy was like Carl Lewis, man.
We're trying to get an overall sponsorship on this podcast. If Liberty Overalls will sponsor this podcast,
we will sell more
overalls than you ever knew you could make.
You couldn't catch this guy on foot. You couldn't catch him on a motorcycle.
Where did this take place?
In South Arkansas in Cleveland County.
Okay. Panther country.
He was fast. They say he was fleet of foot.
Mm.
And the revenuers had tried to catch this cat two or three different times.
Cat.
And they couldn't. You see the cat, parlay. There you go. I just threw that subliminal in there.
So subtle.
They couldn't catch him. I mean, they'd get after him. He'd outrun them. Of course, he knew the woods and the lay of the land. He'd just move his steel. And one morning, they laid out there. And he was out there cooking, getting the fire going, and the old morning constitution hit.
Uh-oh.
And they literally caught him with his overalls down.
Mm.
That's the only way they could catch him.
Wow. I thought you were going to say baited him with a pair of overalls, like a clothes hanger.
Shiny new pair of overalls.
He couldn't get them up and get gone.
Really? And they got him.
And that's how they caught him.
I'll be darned.
A footnote to that story. His job in the federal penitentiary in New Jersey, wherever it was located, was making moonshine for the warden and all the admin staff. He fed chickens and made whiskey in the penitentiary.
Really?
Wow. Yep.
That was his job. Wow. Dad, okay, you heard me tell the story.
Yeah, I heard it.
Now, we called, so Houston Millsap is my mother's father. So he died when I was in the eighth grade. So that would have been I don't know, mid-90s, he died. So I have real strong memories of, we called him Peepaw. I have real vivid memories of him. And great memories of him.
Yeah.
But he was always sick. He had a stroke, and he never was well my whole life. But I vividly remember Dad telling me that, you know, Dad was looking for something good to say about old Peepaw, and he would say he was honest to a fault. What do you remember about Houston?
Well, I remember a lot about him. I mean, when I would pick Judy up when I was in college, I remember one time I was barefooted, and he never let me live that down. You trying to marry my daughter? You ain't got shoes? Come on, man. Well, Peepaw, I always admired him. I'll tell you, to be honest with you. He had a few faults like all of us do, but he was very honest. He didn't try to hide anything. He was up front. And when I go back to a 16-year-old boy, and some of the stuff y'all have already talked about, Forrest alluded to it a little bit, but, you know, if you're in a moonshine culture and your uncles, your aunts, your dad, your mother, you go run moonshine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just that simple. I don't care if it's Billy Graham. He going to run some moonshine because it's in your little culture, that's okay. And the penalty is going to prison, you know. So, anyway, Peepaw, you know, the culture that he was raised up in was you don't squeal on anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know. The culture I was raised up in was don't get involved in stuff that you got to worry about being, you know, so to me, it's like a big deal. But, you know, hey, I was in this other little culture. So, hey, he ain't going to squeal, and I admired him for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I forget this meth stuff you're talking about.
I mean,
in his situation back then, it's, you know, it's real easy to go back 30, 40 years and criticize people.
Yeah.
The people doing the criticizing, if they were there, they'd be doing the same stuff.
Right.
Historical revision is what that's called.
That's what it's called. Well, Peepaw was a fine man.
Yeah.
I tell you, he had a fine family. And Meemaw, was like the queen of queens. Mm-hmm. I mean, this lady was unbelievable. And for her to pick Peepaw, and I mean,
Natalie Millsap.
So Natalie was like,
yeah. You know, I want to justify why I said what I said. I stand by 100% of what you said. Like, I think it was honorable that he didn't rat him out. Both two women in my life that are very influential told me the same story separately. Mom said,
I understand it.
Mom said, hey, I don't know that that's something to be celebrated. And they were a little bit hesitant of me telling the story.
Right.
And, but I just had to tell the story. And I did take the most feedback that I got, specific feedback, was people saying that it wasn't fair to compare moonshine to meth. And I'm 100% on board with that.
Sure, sure.
Really?
Because meth has never been legal. And there was just this short period in human history where making liquor was illegal, And so basically they were like, Clay, that's not apples to apples.
Yeah.
Because meth is like, I mean, it's possible to, consume alcohol and not be a drug head.
Yeah.
I mean, like, but if you're doing any kind of meth, you're in big trouble. So I get that. And I wasn't trying to make a hard, I was just trying to, because that was a new thought to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And, just because I'm saying it doesn't make it right. That's just what I believe, and you're not going to change my mind.
Yeah.
Now, like, one other thing I wanted to say, and I did not have the opportunity. When Roy said, my dad, my grandpa, my uncle, and their friends stayed drunk all the time. I mean, that like set me back. So you look at generations of people. I had a guy do this one time for a group of people. He said, Uncle so-and-so raised his family this way, and look what happened. Uncle so-and-so did it this way, and look what happened. And he drew it down. He went through. So most of the people in that group might have followed the uncle, dad.
Yeah.
And then you see this destruction, women, children, families. Then you got guys like Roy Clark that goes, hey, man.
Yes.
I don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
My grandmother would say, she would not, let me get this right, she would not put a thief in her mouth to steal her brains. My dad said, it was okay to let him run around in there a little bit, just don't take the handcuffs off of him.
Oh, no.
Gary, what I really liked is that moment where Roy is, and I can't remember the exact details, but he's talking to you, but in the room is the grandson of the gentleman who wrote him the Valentine and said, yes, we're bear hunters,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And from what I got was that the Roy, in that moment, looked over at that grandson and basically affirmed him.
Yeah.
And said, this guy's a stand-up guy no matter what. And that, to me, is the embodiment of what you're saying, Gary, which is like Roy decided he's going to do it different.
Yeah.
And as he looked around at him and he saw a man doing something right, man, I affirm that. And that guy, what did he say about? He said,
he loved him for it.
Yeah, he
said,
loved him.
He said, that boy right there won't leave you, and I loved him for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I love him for it.
Yep. And, think about all those men who had left Roy, and he said, I don't want to be that way. And then he's now looking at the younger generations and saying yes to that. And at the same time, he's saying no to something else, which I think is one of the things I saw in
Mr. Roy is that, it really wasn't about the drinking or not drinking. He had an awareness of patterns that he chose to steer clear of.
He
said, I know I know for me, it's not about drinking or not drinking. It's about understanding how the patterns are and generational continuance. I believe someone can drink moderately and have great kids. But you have to be aware. It really comes down to awareness. So I appreciated the fact that because he had to see something in them that he didn't want. yeah. and adjust his life accordingly.
And Mr. Roy did something that's very hard. He broke something that was not common for people to be able to break, like to be able to have that kind of awareness and just do a 90-degree turn.
Oh, yeah.
And, hey, that's the reason that podcast is about Roy Clark. I had a few – one person in particular that wrote me and he missed the whole point of everything I was doing because he tried to tell me that there were better bear hunters than Roy Clark that I could have done a podcast with. And, I mean – and I took liberty to like smack the guy upside the head. I really did. It wasn't somebody I knew. It was like, because I was just like,
was
dude,
it Malachi?
It was Malachi.
And that's what no, he's not doing.
Basically, I feel the liberty to highlight, like nobody's perfect. I mean, like James Lawrence isn't perfect. Roy Clark isn't perfect. Gary Newcomb isn't perfect. But the people that I highlight have some level of character, and that is something that I deeply value.
And what about Brent?
Brent is right on the edge.
You said he's a professional liar.
Brent is teetering on the edge.
I identified so much with what he was talking about and how emotional he got.
Yeah, wasn't that something when he cried?
I got a friend in England, Adam Dean, that listens to our other podcast. This guy has such a passion for all the stuff that we do, and there are no coons in the United Kingdom. There ain't enough coon dogs in England to fill up that dog pen right out there, but he absolutely loves it. And he and I were talking the other day, back and forth, and he said, you know, you described coon hunting so eloquently to me, and I'm like, well, I'm going to need to hear this back. What did I say? He said, well, you told me that, you know, coon hunting wasn't at the tree. Coon hunting was everything before and everything after. And he's right. You know, it's me sitting out in the backyard watching my coon dog and my little girl run around the backyard, or my wife come home from Texas the other day with a bow tie for this dog to wear around. And this dog is just that's the whole thing, the whole embodiment of it. And that's what I got out of Mr. Roy's passion and how emotional he was about it, man. I get it. Yeah. And if you get it, the guy that wrote you the story or that wrote you the note about there are better bear hunters out there, there may be more successful in numbers of bear hunters out there probably, but there probably ain't no better one than that.
Yeah.
And he missed it.
What I appreciated about Roy, so I went back from an old podcast like that. I took that conversation out of context and played it. And Roy never gave a second thought to him breaking down into tears in front of, there were 20 people in that room. Like in the podcast, there were four guys that had headsets on. There were 20 people. It was like a live recording, like neighbors, grandkids. And I actually thought, you know, I wonder if Roy's going to say, hey, don't put that on there. That embarrassed me. It never occurred to him. Like he just is what he is. That's powerful, especially in a culture that defines manhood in all these false ways.
Sure.
I mean, for a grown man to be able to look across a room and call somebody out and break into tears and then immediately jump back in to talking about bear dogs, to me that's a
where does that happen? That's so rare.
Emotion, like that's yeah. that's good.
Well, yeah. That grand the son, the guy that got on there and it said, see how important it is to us.
Yeah,
put in that same position, I could see that guy doing the same thing.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah. Well, he just scripted out for everybody in that room that looked up to him that hey, this is it's okay to cry. It's okay to have. To express affection for someone.
And not just it's okay, but as Roy Clark, I am a man and this is how you be a man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just permit. It's not okay, you can do that. But if you're going to be a man, this is how you be a man.
Yeah.
Another thing he said that it's similar to what you know to Gary about maybe the negative side of keeping people around. But I liked it anyway. He said, you know, if you want to make money, this is a terrible place to live and do life. But if you want to have a close family, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, he said, I believe there's no better place in the world. And I think just that value of he knows what's important to him and he goes about building his family that way. And so he structured his life in particular ways to make that happen. That's the 90 degree turn from the popular culture, which is what you're going to, you got to get an education and you got to get a job and you got to get a 2-car garage. And I mean, I've got a ton of education, but I still want to have a family.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it was, I thought Dr. Pierce did a good job of showing a balanced perspective. Dr. Pierce has a book called Corn from a Jar, and it's about moonshiners. And he says in the book that his point was to humanize moonshiners, which was interesting because I came into it not wanting to glorify it. I just wanted to tell the story. And I think he gave a really balanced, good view. Like, you'd learn something listening to that. I thought he did a good job. The NASCAR stuff was cool.
Fascinating.
Anyway, the podcast to me, I mean, I loved it. What's so cool about this is I'm researching the stuff that I'm interested in. So like, I could have made that podcast and like nobody heard it, and me just listened to it, and I would have loved it. It's like all stuff that I'm like super interested in.
But the big question is, would you listen to this podcast?
The Render?
Yeah.
With these stories? Oh, yeah. Woo. Forrest, get your guitar out.
All right.
What are you gonna sing us?
Well, I hope my guitar is still in tune, first of all. But I picked a song that has a lot of layers here relative to what we talked about and just the Render in general. This is a song written by Jimmy Driftwood in 1959, recorded by Doc Watson in 1966.
All right, let's hear it. What's it called?
It's called Tennessee Stud.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Round about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. Never would have made it through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been riding on the Tennessee Stud. Had some trouble with my sweetheart's pa. One of her brothers was a bad outlaw.
Is that some of your kin, Brent?
Wrote her a letter by my Uncle Fudd, and I rode away on the Tennessee Stud. Tennessee Stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee Stud.
That's right.
Drifted on down into no man's land, across that river called the Rio Grande. I raced my horse with the Spaniards full, till I got me a skin full of silver and gold. Me and the gambler, we couldn't agree. We got in a fight over Tennessee. We drew our guns and he fell with a thud, and I rode away on the Tennessee Stud. The Tennessee Stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee Stud. Got just lonesome as a man can be, dreaming of my girl in Tennessee. The Tennessee Stud's green eyes turned blue, cause he was a dreaming of a sweetheart too. We loped right back across Arkansas, whooped her brother and I whooped her paw.
That's right.
No relation.
I found that girl with the golden hair, and she was a-riding on the Tennessee mare.
Tennessee Mare.
Tennessee Stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee Stud. Stirrup to stirrup and side by side, across the mountains and the valleys wide. Came to Big Muddy and we forded the flood on the Tennessee Mare and the Tennessee Stud. Pretty little baby on the cabin floor, a little horse called playing round the door.
I love that girl with the golden hair and the Tennessee stud. Love the Tennessee mare. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee stud.
Right on.
There we go.
Awesome.
Well, that's great.
Perfect. Perfect.
Good stuff.
That is a, a heck of a song.
Yeah.
You know what?
So many layers to
I
that one.
I grin from ear to ear every time I hear Arkansas in a song. I mean, I cannot help it. I'm like, I love it.
Yeah, when you told me pick one, have one of mine, I was like, I know the one.
You knew it.
It's got
you know it.
Equines, got Arkansas, got Tennessee.
It's hard, yeah, to, it's hard to rhyme Arkansas with like maybe broke yeah. jaw.
Well, hey, thanks a ton, guys. Thank each and every one of you. This has been a good render. And keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live, and that's where we get bear grease. Let me hear your best owl hoot. Josh.
I feel so bad going after Brent, because that's a good
hoot. I'm glad. Go
Okay, yeah. Brent, okay, Gary. Now, Forrest,
he's a veteran.
Has a good,
I don't, know
don't let me down, Forrest. That's good.
That's a good, that's good.
Yeah,
that's a good
that's
hoot.
That's
that
best,
guy
that's,
can do anything.
That's the best one yet.
That's okay.
Try an owl next time.
Try an owl next time.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box. Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's markethouse.com. And use the code COUNTRY.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.